This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Today marks the 25th anniversary of Martin Luther King Jr. Day, but it wasn't until 1993 that the holiday was observed in all 50 states. This federal holiday marks the anniversary of Dr. King's birthday and is often celebrated as a day of service. Some say it's not a day off, but a day on. Each year, people across the country spend this day helping out their neighbors and their communities. Later in the show, the organization Meals on Wheels searches for additional drivers to help them continue assisting seniors, and DJs raise money for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. But first, we turn our attention to a celebration of Dr. King taking place later this week. All of 32 years old, Eddie L. Armstrong has created a place for himself among the leading young community activists in the nation. Armstrong is co-founder and chief executive officer of Armstrong and Davis Consulting in North Little Rock and founder of the Eddie Armstrong Scholarship Foundation, a nonprofit dedicated to providing scholarships to minority students from single-parent households. Armstrong's commitment to community service was also featured in A Hand to Guide Me, a book by Denzel Washington. Armstrong is the keynote speaker for the University of Arkansas Fort Smith's Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day celebration on Thursday. Ozarks at Large's Ithi Agnihotri-Madolkar spoke with him about his upcoming talk and his dedication to service.
You started off really early, volunteering in your community, helping out. What inspired you to get involved?
Several different components inspired me to get involved. And I think number one, the biggest component was just taking advantage of the fact that there were so many different changing elements to my community at an early age, spending a large proportion of my very early young years in a housing project in Little Rock, Arkansas, and then moving into an apartment neighborhood and several different neighborhoods. I used to just always pay attention to the area in which surrounded me, and as a youngster growing into, you know, my teenage years, I began to really adapt to the opportunities to keep a clean environment, like I cleaned my house, because that's the way we were trained inside of our home with my mom, is to keep a clean home. So I would begin to get interested in things like keeping trash off the streets, taking care of our local neighborhood parks, volunteering with other teenagers in my local community to do things for the elderly. I'd soon say that, you know, I've said it before, that you wake up and service is a part of your DNA. It's something that you live with daily. You don't wake up and just have the knack to serve because it's a job. You serve because it's a part of who you are. And I think just quite naturally, it's always just been a part of who I am as an individual.
Mm-hmm. So definitely your family helped you a lot to get you involved. It inspired you. But there are many youngsters nowadays who might have the will to serve their community, but not necessarily the direction and maybe the means. What would you say to such youngsters or even individuals, grown-ups, who want to do something but pretty much don't know how to go about it?
I'd soon say to youngsters, when you speak about the means, again, it goes back to, if the will is inside of you as a young teenager or even a young 9-10-year-old that wants to take out time to raise money or to feed the homeless or to create a cleanup or painting project in your local neighborhood, I think when you take on a lifestyle of serving others, the means tend to find you. So I would say to younger children, to young adults that are looking for an outlet or an avenue in which to take on service as an active role in their local communities, it starts nowhere closer than right in their own homes and right in their own mindset. And from there, you take the steps to ask the proper questions, to seek out the advice of those that may be a little older. It gave me the opportunity to at least springboard my ideas and my thoughts in a way that if maybe I was missing something or I wasn't thinking about a certain group of people that it may impact, I'd had the chance to at least start by asking questions of somebody that was in my peer group, that was of maybe the same like thinking, that may not even get out and participate in the activity, but have the chance to give me input, advice, and opinions on the things that I was thinking about very early on in life, searching inside themselves to see exactly where their energies are channeled, and then taking that energy and turning a possibility into reality. It's pretty pragmatic. We just have to encourage our young people that it's okay to do things a little bit different than the norm, than the rest of their peer group or population, whether it be at school or their church or their community.
Now, you've been speaking to students, spreading the message of self-development for probably 10 years now?
Yes, sure.
Does any one particular incident come to mind at these schools when you were speaking to these students who might have shared something from their lives or a moment when they were really influenced by what you said?
Absolutely. You know, one of the most compelling and interesting things about speaking to young people, whether they're third grade classrooms or a class full of sophomore juniors or high school freshmen, seniors, and juniors, there is this moment in which I've been able to experience throughout my servanthood of being able to be a public speaker and offer a message of hope and inspiration to young people, where the speech and the message transition from being an actual speech and a message to being a conversation with these young people about things that are affecting their lives daily and directly. Being a young kid myself, raised in a single-parent household, watching at a very young age the ills of abuse in my household at some sort of level, and transitioning out of that into a single-parent household where a mother worked 2 to 3 jobs and continuously educated and encouraged me to go after the things that I most aspired out of life. At those critical moments in my remarks, oftentimes, I see lights go off in certain students' eyes. And as the message continues to carry over about the importance of service, about things that I experienced through my college years and my young adult years, I see other lights go off in other young people's minds. So whether it's been the hardships of my life or the transition into, you know, a corporate CEO or an executive of a nonprofit or a college student that had a great tenure of success, each level of some of the messages that we've been able to deliver along the lines of our speeches and messages have been able to meet students where they are. I'll often get students come to me after a particular speech or workshop, and they will say to me that, you know, one particular proportion of what I said made the difference, or they could relate directly to it. And when that happens, the conversation then ensues to what are we doing now to make what we experienced in our younger years better for our tomorrows.
Now, we speak about the word service. We've spoken about it a couple of times now. What does the word mean to you?
It has so many meanings, but I'd soon sum it up in my own personal view. I see service as a cause for success and positive change. That's simple. And the reason I say that is because it was asked to me recently, what does it mean to be African American in 2011? And I reflected on that a great deal, thinking about our current president and the light that he holds up, thinking about Dr. Martin Luther King and the light that he held up, thinking about how young and idealistic they were, but yet how encouraged and energized and focused they were on serving greater men and women, the greater cause of our country. And out of their will to serve, success and positive change of some manner came about. And then I began to think about things like Hurricane Katrina, and I spoke about this, and the Dust Bowl crisis, and 9/11, and the great migration of Southern blacks to the North, and the fact that in these highlighted moments of our time's history, that things were at their bleakest, that they were at their most downtrodden times, people band together, whether it was one race of people or pockets of races of people or all one race of people, meaning African American or white Americans, but they band together and they served each other with less to make more happen in those times. And I think service is simply equates to those three words, success and positive change.
That's great. Now, you are the keynote speaker for a Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. celebration on 20th of January at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith. Before we get into the details of the event, I'd like to ask you, how much effect has Dr. Martin Luther King had on your thoughts, your words, your actions?
Quite a great impact. I was brought to the awareness of who Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was in my young teenage years between the ages of 13 and 15 years old. And it was by way of a great friend and a mentor and a big brother to me that exposed me to the working opportunities that Dr. King seized, whether they were against 5,000 or against none. From the things that Dr. King placed his time and energy into, allowed for doors to be opened that I probably never could fathom and only can read in black and white words on a paperback book sometimes. But when I think about what Dr. King's legacy means to me, it means continuously what I just stated. I believe that he truly was a man of servant leadership. And out of the great level of service that he put forward, propelled him into the position of a natural-born leader for so many of that era, which again brings out the level of the word success and positive change.
Now, for the talk on Thursday at University of Arkansas Fort Smith, what do you want the students to take away from your talk? What do you want them to be talking about after they leave?
That their moment is right now. Whether you're a frontline leader or you're a leader that is intent on serving from the back and pushing the frontline leader forward, right now is the time for them to seize and take action, to work together in any way that they possibly can. And I want to leave some things on their mind about the people and the leaders, such as John F. Kennedy, who was very young and idealistic and focused when he, you know, made some of the greatest impacts on our country to date. And Dr. King and how young and very idealistic yet focused he was. And that same youthful energy, that same idealistic state of mind, that same energy and focus is exactly why after his death in 1980s they passed the legislation, because there were so many things pushed forward that had spawned out of his legacy and his lifespan that made possibilities, open doors to now where we have a federal holiday and a day of service. And I just want to encourage them that they too can do the same exact thing at this particular moment in their life, right now, on their college campus, back home in their communities when they go home over the holiday breaks, wherever they should move to when they graduate and cross the stage of that great university, that in their youngest moments brings about some of the brightest, freshest, unique, creative ideas and challenges, because they're challenging themselves only. There's several people supporting and aiming for young people that care to serve, that care to make a difference, and it is their time to do that. Again, you know, the U of A Fort Smith and its program that they have right now around American democracy is an awesome, awesome program. And I am, again, just very grateful that I have the opportunity on the foothills of Dr. King's holiday and the 25th anniversary of this holiday to continue to move the greatness of service into the light that you don't have to necessarily be anybody special. You don't have to do anything miraculous to take some time out of your schedule to serve your fellow man and your woman.
Thank you, Eddie.
Thank you very much.
Armstrong will address UA Fort Smith students on Thursday about combining leadership theory and practice with community service learning. The talk starts at 10 a.m. in the Reynolds Room of the Smith Pendergraph Campus Center. The Fayetteville Senior Center delivers hundreds of hot meals every week to shut-in seniors, and they need your help. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich explains.
Today, cook Bob Rich is baking giant chicken pot pies, cheddar cheese broccoli casseroles, and hundreds of hot biscuits in a large kitchen at the Fayetteville Senior Center on South College.
The ingredients for the pot pies is mixed fresh frozen veggies, which as we all know is about as healthy for you as a freshly picked one. Nice chicken, which we order from one of our food vendors, and pastry sheets. Chicken gravy, diced onions, diced peppers, and a few secret ingredients.
But it turns out to be a pretty tasty meal. That's what it looks like when it's done. We put out about, on a normal week, 800 meals a week.
All prepared with a smile. Everyone here is really cheerful and hardworking. Meals are designed around strict dietary protocols using donations from the local food bank Tyson, Cargill, Sam's Club, and Walmart.
We have guidelines on the amount of servings, the serving sizes, portion sizes, and through the years working in schools, you learn what makes a balanced meal. And if you serve a mixture of fresh frozen veggies, that will pretty well cover you with about any entree that you cook. And we do about 75% scratch cooking in the kitchen. So, and we try to extract any grease out of meats before it's served. You know, we're a health conscious kitchen. That's the way we do it.
No powdered mixes here. Three women assemble the lunches, placing steaming measured portions into plastic trays, which are sealed then stacked.
I'm Cindy, and I'm putting chicken pot pie for the Meals on Wheels.
I'm Sarah, and I'm putting a biscuit and cheesy broccoli.
And I'm Gladys, and I'm sealing up these meals.
In the vestibule, a fleet of drivers armed with heated thermal bags and coolers filled with fresh milk wait to deliver the lunches to waiting disabled seniors around town.
I'm Kathy Whitney. We're going on the central route, so kind of close by here.
I'm Sophia Cozada, and we're going to Meals on Wheels, close by here.
Well, thank you. Good luck out there.
All right, and what's your name?
My name is Marcia Gordon.
And where are you delivering to?
I'm central with them. I've been doing this, about 4 or 5 years, and I did it with another friend, and now I do it with Kathy and Sophia. It makes it a lot more fun.
My name is Carolyn Cheek. I'm the program assistant for Meals on Wheels in Fayetteville, and we are about to go see Miss Marie. She is one of our Meals on Wheels recipients. Definitely one of my favorites.
Carolyn Cheek, by the way, is also an emergency backup driver because the program currently has none. More about that in a bit. She's taking us to meet 77-year-old Marie Layton.
Hi, Marie. It's me, Carolyn. Darling.
Marie uses a walker. The St. Paul native has no husband or children. Her sole surviving sibling, a sister, lives over in Oklahoma. She really looks forward to a hot meal and a daily visit.
I've got that Parkinson's, you know, and shake, so I can't not able to cook anymore. So they mean a lot to me, just God's blessing. I appreciate them so much.
Yesterday, Marie enjoyed catfish for lunch. A menu's provided to her so she can look ahead. She's also provided 5 fresh frozen meals in case of inclement weather, as well as instant safe shelf meals in case of emergencies. Marie clearly adores Carolyn, a pretty college graduate recently hired to Meals on Wheels.
Marie's I tell you, she's my girl. Talk to her every day, don't I, Marie?
Yeah, I can meet you, no.
No, you don't. I look forward to it.
Carolyn's a communication major, the daughter of a doctor, and she's really good with elders.
I look at them all as family because they're someone's mom, they're someone's aunt, uncle, whatever. And I see my own family in them, and I see that, you know, they need people taking care of them too. And it's hard to cook, isn't it, Marie? Yeah. So, you know, and
when you get where you can.
Yeah, so we make sure they get a hot meal every day, and and some milk and bread and just a good nutritious meal. So even if it's their only meal that day, we know that they're at least getting a good nutritious meal that day. So,
and you get a visit too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love all the deliveries. They're all just wonderful.
Yeah.
Many seniors on the program are in wheelchairs. Some are bedridden. Home health aides are not authorized to prepare foods for their clients, but they can warm up food.
You wouldn't believe how many of those people answer the door to just take the meal because these individuals are unable to even answer the door.
Sherry Napier runs Meals on Wheels, as well as directs the Fayetteville Senior Activity and Wellness Center on South College. She said to enroll, seniors must meet certain qualifications.
Meals on Wheels is for anyone that's 60 and over, that cannot prepare their meal by themselves, cannot leave their home unassisted, and has no one there during lunchtime to prepare their meal. A lot of the Meals on Wheels clients have someone there that can fix their dinner, but most of their children, of course, work, and so they can't have anybody during that time.
Meals on Wheels, Association of America's oldest and largest senior nutrition program in the nation, with 5,000 local programs. Two dozen other Meals on Wheels groups operate around Arkansas in places like Gravette, Pine Bluff, Paragould, Harrison, and Hot Springs.
The Meals on Wheels program has been administered out of this facility here for about 8 years. And before that, it was on Sang Boulevard in Fayetteville for many, many years. I don't know exactly when they started.
And how is it funded?
It's funded from federal and state government, about, I think, 48%. And then the rest is fundraising and local donations. And United Way gives us some money, also Walmart.
When word got out last year that there was a waiting list of seniors for Meals on Wheels, the Arkansas Community Foundation issued a $30,000 community matching grant. An anonymous donor met that challenge, along with $11,000 additional dollars by other contributors. Washington Regional also donated $15,000 because it refers certain discharged seniors to the program. But Meals on Wheels could not operate without its dedicated volunteer drivers.
They may take a little bit longer to deliver the meals, but they spend some time with the seniors and get to know them and find out what their needs are and if they can help them. Because of we're in the business for what we do, we also cross lines with a lot of other area nonprofits and businesses that can help them in ways that we can't, so we can put them in touch with that.
Two paid drivers equipped with Meals on Wheels trucks deliver the longer routes, while 40 volunteers divide up shorter ones.
What happens is each day a different volunteer shows up for each route. And so, you know, for example, Bank of Fayetteville has different employees they send over on their lunch hour to deliver area churches and different businesses send their employees over to do a route. So they change. It may be the same group initially, but they change at each week.
Volunteers can choose routes between 5 to 15 homes to fit their schedules. As many as 140 seniors also come to the Senior Center to enjoy Bob Rich's healthy but savory home cooking, paying just a few dollars a day. That helps, of course, to pay for more food. But along with the much-appreciated monetary donations, Director Sherry Napier said Fayetteville Meals on Wheels really needs backup drivers.
Just like anybody else, people take vacation. They get sick. Things happen. And even, when they are very loyal about showing up, still there's situations. We do not have a large volunteer backup list for our Meals on Wheels routes.
So if you enjoy the company of elders, Sherry Napier would love to hear from you. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
More information is available at 479-571-2920 or FayettevilleMillsOnWheels.com.
¶¶
is Monday, January 17th, 2011. With me now in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up, the entertainment section found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
And we get to badmouth Kyle Kellums, who is in New Orleans, we hate him.
No, he can still hear this.
I don't care. Oh, we can badmouth him anyway.
Well, you can.
Oh, I guess you can. Okay, moving on. Today is Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Yes.
And there is a march at 11:15, starting at the Walton Art Center parking lot in Fayetteville, a vigil at noon at the Arkansas Union Ballroom, and the recommitment banquet at 7 o'clock at Fayetteville Town Center with Charles Stewart, most recently interim chief executive officer for Heifer International and co-founder of the Arkansas Black Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Fascinating to talk to. Tickets for the banquet are $15 to $25. I don't know if any are still available, so call 575-4825. Also, there's music tonight. You know, Mondays are kind of slow, but not deadly slow. Sarah Slayton is playing at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. David Johnson at JJ's Grill and Chill in Rogers. There's an acoustic jam from 7 to 10 at the Perk on Weddington in Fayetteville. Lots of fun. And Darren Ray is playing at 7 at Pesto Cafe in Fayetteville.
All right. Thank you, Becca.
Thanks, Antoinette.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, the entertainment section found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
Why do you let me stay here all by myself?
Actress and singer Zooey Deschanel was born on this date in 1980 in Los Angeles, California. Born into a show business family, the young actress made her film debut in the 1990 comedy Mumford. In her second film, she played Anita Miller, the protagonist's rebellious older sister, in Cameron Crowe's Almost Famous in 2000. During the next few years, Deschanel played supporting roles in a series of films, including Manic, Big Trouble, Abandon, and The Good Girl. In 2003, she played her first lead role in All the Real Girls and received an Independent Spirit nomination for Best Actress. Later that year, she played opposite Will Ferrell in the comedy Elf. In 2009, she reunited with her Manic co-star Joseph Gordon-Levitt in the romantic comedy drama 500 Days of Summer, which received a Golden Globe Award nomination for Best Motion Picture for a Comedy or Musical. In addition to her work as an actress, Deschanel is one half of the musical duo She and Him. The group has released two studio albums, Volume 1 in 2008 and Volume 2 in 2010. The buildings of St. John's College in Little Rock, the first college in Arkansas to receive a charter, burned to the ground on this date in 1890. The Grand Lodge of Arkansas had ended its funding of the college in 1878 and leased it to Professor Leo Bayer. The professor made some improvements and the enrollment increased to 142 by 1881. After he retired, W.J. Alexander assumed the contract, and the college continued until 1882, when the Grand Lodge voted to sell all the property of the college and the Masonic Addition in order to raise funds to build a new Masonic temple in Little Rock. No students were taught at St. John's after 1882. On this date in 1893, Hawaii's monarchy was overthrown as a group of businessmen and sugar planters forced Queen Liliuokalani to abdicate. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda. From Muskogee to Mountainburg, Goodman to Greenwood, this is your public radio station, KUAF 91.3 FM Fayetteville, a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large. Since 1980, the Make-A-Wish Foundation has granted the wishes of children with life-threatening medical conditions. This Saturday, a group of DJs in Fayetteville will help raise money for the organization. Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums has more.
Today, the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday is a day of service for many. And in Northwest Arkansas, service can come in many varieties. Later this week, several DJs will take the stage at Rogue on Dixon Street in an effort to keep people dancing and an effort to raise money for the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
This genre of music, you don't really make a whole lot of money for yourselves anyway. So we just kind of figured if we were going to do this, let's do it and try to make money for somebody who really needed it. And this was kind of what we came up with to do benefits. And that's, you know.
Donnie Petrie is one half of the DJ duo Stereo Kill. He and partner Josh Parker helped organize the fundraising event for Make-A-Wish that takes place Saturday night. Another organizing partner, Brittany Horn, helped put the Saturday night show together. She says she's been mixing two of her passions, music and charity, since she was a teenager.
I started doing events in 2004, just different benefits for local charities in Hot Springs, where I went to high school, and did that for a couple years, worked a couple venues, and then I took a couple years off whenever I left the state. But I got back here last summer, and I decided to do an event, and I started asking around, met a lot of people, and had an event at George's in November, and it went really well, and these guys were nice enough to let me help with theirs, too, so.
It's an idea as old as those old Andy Hardy movies with Mickey Rooney. Some people get together and decide to put on a show. The goal for this show is nonstop music. Several DJs will spin records, and Donnie and Josh, as Stereo Kill, will be working later in the night, creating one never-ending song by mixing music seamlessly between two turntables, often manipulating the speed of a turntable so one song's beat matches up with another. Josh and Donnie say all of this is done with the audience in mind. In short, keep them dancing.
You can't throw one way different type of music with another. I mean, you can, but if they don't mesh well, you know, it's going to be a disaster.
It's not gonna mix, yeah.
Even if it's a good mix, it's still going to sound bad, you know, and you got to really, you got to really know your music and, yeah.
Through what you pick. I mean, it's a lot of audience too. If the audience is not into what you're playing, then you really have to swap fast and kind of get in and out and into a different maybe subgenre, I guess, of what you're doing. But it's a lot of the elements need to be the same in what you're going in and out of, or at least close enough to make it sound like it's not a train wreck.
Good DJs, very good ones, are able to find mixes and musical collaborations that surprise people on the dance floor and move from one familiar track to another before most people realize that the change has even happened.
That's what you want. I mean,
you can see it in people's faces too. If you throw a track that everybody really, really knows and really, really likes, then you can kind of see the light bulb come on when people realize that song.
You can feel it in the crowd too.
Yeah.
Like, whenever the song changes and people don't realize that it changes, like, the crowd, like, it's like this common, like, this consciousness when everybody realizes, wait a second, that was awesome. So
this, like, collective aha.
Yeah, basically. I love it when that happens, actually. It's pretty brilliant.
That doesn't come easy. Donnie and Josh say they rarely, if ever, make out playlists, nor do they keep a mental list of what combinations have worked in the past, since almost every show they do is different. They work on the fly, using their knowledge of music to understand what song might work best next with the one playing at the present time. A lot of the skills DJs use to make those eureka dance floor moments happen involve a small switch on the turntable that will allow the speed of a record to be changed, sometimes ever so slightly.
What you do is when you throw it in, you either kind of drag the record to slow it down, and then you adjust the speed, and or you spin the record and speed it up. Increase the tempo, you know, and you just do that until they're just exactly aligned, which is really tough. I mean, you got one headphone on one ear, the other headphone listening to the sound out here, and you got to be able to decipher the two, and that takes a lot of practice.
It's like the most basic thing that you can,
it is,
that you learn.
Yeah,
it takes
the first
longest
thing
to really figure it out. It's like an epiphany when it happens. It just kind of...
Oh, yeah, you hear music differently.
Yeah.
It's the day you can hear this record and this headphone and this beat out here and just be able to completely separate the two is the day you just learn to be a DJ, basically.
Yeah, you know? Pretty much, yeah.
DJs have been entertaining for decades, and until recent years, most of them counted on vinyl records to help create their sound. Technology, though, is making the craft of DJing a bit different. The internet and download sites mean that today's DJ doesn't need to drag in crates of records. Songs can be downloaded at the moment. And the latest software means converting MP3 and digital recordings into vinyl, sort of.
You can't ever beat the touch of vinyl, and lucky for all the DJs in the world that just love the vinyl touch, they have this company called Rain made this software called Serato. And what it actually does, you can load up MP3s on your laptop, and you can play them through a vinyl record.
It's digitally encoded records.
Wait, what now? Okay, so
special, yeah, it's pretty incredible.
So you have the turntable, and a vinyl record or
a special
vinyl
the
record
makes, yeah.
And you have downloaded something, an MP3, and you play it. You can manipulate it using this special vinyl, so it's as if it were on the vinyl.
Exactly. Yep. You can move the needle to a different part on the vinyl, and it will go to that part of the song.
You can see and hear the skills of several DJs, including the duo Stereo Kill at Rogue on Dixon Street in Fayetteville Saturday night. Proceeds raised at the event will be given to the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Saturday night's event is sponsored by A&B Repro Graphics, Arkansas Western Gas Company, and New Edge Apparel. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Kyle Kellums.
As the bleak winter season continues into the month of February, many sports are wrapping up for the season. But one growing local sport is just getting started. The Northwest Arkansas Lacrosse League will kick off its fifth season beginning next month. Chris Winsler, one of the league's assistant coaches, says after being introduced to the region a few years ago, the sport and the league are beginning to be embraced by Northwest Arkansas residents.
It was founded by a woman named Vera McMurrin. She had a son who played lacrosse. They had moved into the area. And she had also happened to volunteer for the Y and began to, really through her own will and initiative, grab other families who were familiar with the sport, and thus the nucleus was born. This year in 2011, all total, male and female, from fourth grade up through high school, we have about 100 athletes in the system. The divisions are really fourth and fifth graders, and then kind of sixth through eighth grade. And then we have varsity and junior varsity in both boys and girls. It's really been just a grassroots effort, and it's been populated not only by folks who've moved to the area from other lacrosse-rich areas like the Mid-Atlantic, the Northeast, and Colorado, but it's also been a sport that a lot of the local athletes have embraced and embraced strongly. And I think the reason they love it is because the sport requires the agility, the dexterity, and really skills that are associated with sports known to them, like basketball, like football, in that there's contact in the male game, and hockey to a certain degree, and soccer, in that the positioning of the players, the movement around the goal, has a lot to do with how to score, how to set up, and how to utilize your teammates.
Winsler was born and raised in Memphis, Tennessee. He learned more about lacrosse when he and his family moved to Massachusetts, and his sons began participating in the sport. He notes that many of the other league coaches have strong experience with the sport, thanks to Division I and Division III college lacrosse. The University of Arkansas in Fayetteville has a lacrosse club, but other universities throughout the country have NCAA-sanctioned lacrosse teams. Winsler says they stress the importance of academics first, but the sport is one way to help students secure a spot in college.
Some of the great places to learn about lacrosse, not only ESPN and some of the televised medium, actually cable shows quite a lot of recorded video, but the website uslacrosse.org teaches, it's our national organization that we are working to become a chapter of. We've begun our chapter status work so that we can begin to have a recognized chapter here. Some of the recognized chapters in the area include Kansas City, Oklahoma City, Dallas, St. Louis, Memphis. It's just a tremendous sport, and the larger cities have really embraced it. It has taken off. Since I was a boy in Memphis, lacrosse is now, I believe there are 45 teams in the Memphis area, and there are a lot of Division I, two, and three scholarships available to lacrosse players. In fact, two of the boys from Bentonville this past year were able to secure a spot in college via lacrosse.
In addition to helping students obtain a path to higher learning, the Lacrosse League can offer more athletes the opportunity to be involved in a sport.
We see a lot of athletes who are very, very good, very, very quick, but for some reason or other don't get to participate in a lot of the larger schools in their athletic programs. They do, but it's really only in a practice method. They never see the field. And one of the things about lacrosse, the speed at which it's growing, is that we need all the athletes we can get. And it's a fantastic way for your son or daughter to get playing time on with a team sport and get on the field, because some of those differences in life are really happen out on the field, and you really begin to get the confidence you need.
The Northwest Arkansas lacrosse teams often travel for their matches, but Winsler says he hopes with the growth of the sport in the area that one day that won't be the case.
Our future state is we would love to have enough teams in this area so we would not have to travel outside of Benton and Washington counties. But that's where getting the word out about lacrosse comes in, and getting in some of these athletes we see throughout our school systems to learn to play lacrosse. Currently we travel to Tulsa, we travel over to Edmond, Oklahoma, Oklahoma City. We are looking at Kansas City. We have traveled as far away as Wichita and Dallas, because some of the tournaments that they host in those areas are so rich in competition and so rich in the spirit and fun of lacrosse. We went to Dallas a few weeks back, just before the holidays, and there were probably 150 teams from all over the Midwest, Dallas and around, that came to compete. We joined up with the Tulsa squad and played in a round robin of six games over 2 days. And it was a fantastic experience for all of our varsity and junior varsity boys.
The expansion of the league in the future could also potentially open the doors for post-college athletes to participate as well.
Lacrosse continues college and post-college for all athletes who would like to play. Our goal in forming our own separate league and growing out from what had been very humble beginnings is to gain exactly that, a full strata of players from, be it first, second, third grade through the YMCA, and fourth grade and up through our club to post-college to really begin to gain a footing for lacrosse in the area. There are a lot of players with experience who are just, it's either it's become dormant because they don't have a place to play, or they just don't think it's available here. So we have to make sure we get the word out and recruit people. We need coaches, we need referees, we need fields. We're growing so fast that each of us has a challenge to get the particular aspect that we have within our cities and our surrounding areas and fulfill it so that we can get enough kids out to play.
In order for lacrosse to grow in the area, Winsler says it's important to get the word out about the sport.
We have grown from very humble beginnings to something that may have traction and is going to really, really be embraced, I think, by the community. Lauren West of Bentonville, the Bentonville Athletics Director, let us play at halftime during Tiger Pride, and we got exposure to a lot of folks. We're working on the same type of exposure through Rogers High Schools, and would welcome, you know, Fayetteville and Springdale, those four big cities here on our corridor. If we can get their high school athletes interested in the sport, we will be able to build a league that is fantastic and can rival cities like Kansas City, Dallas, Oklahoma City.
The Northwest Arkansas League season will run until May. In April, the organization will host a lacrosse fest where several out-of-state teams will come compete in Bentonville. More information on the Northwest Arkansas Lacrosse League is available at nwalacrosse.com. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Nail, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. And before I go, there's one more piece of news. Don Harp, the eldest son of the founders of Harp's Grocery, passed away over the weekend. Harp served as Harp's president from 1968 until 1994. Visitation is scheduled from 5 to 7 tonight at Cisco Funeral Chapel of Springdale. Services are set for 11 a.m. tomorrow at Cross Church. Charitable contributions can be made to the Springdale Kiwanis Club Scholarship Fund or the Oklahoma or Arkansas chapters of the Alzheimer's Association. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. Have a great day.